Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 30. Where is it? I'm still verse 17, but it's all without purport, so we'll just keep reading. Anyway. Daityayitva jaharanyam eko krishnarbha pavanam ringayam asa kapi angri kashanti kosha nihishvanai. Tatyaitva jaharanyam eko krishnar babhavanam ringayam asakapyangri kashanti goshanishpanai. Tatyaitva jaharanyam eko krishnar babhavanam ringayam asakapyangri kashanti goshanishvanai. Chant. Apologies.
Thank you.
Tatyaitva. Imitating a demon, namely Trinavarta. It's pronounced Trinavarta. We never say it like that, though, do we? We always do that wrong. A lot of names have accents in a certain place, but we have our American way of doing it. Okay, so from now on, whenever you tell the pastime of Trinavarta, you have to say it like that, otherwise, who knows? Oh. Prajapati Prabhu was saying when a vowel comes before two consonants, really? Even though it doesn't have a long line over it? So the A instead of is ah? Really? I've never seen that before. Do you have a reference for that? Maybe you can. Does it say that in the general pronunciation guide that we have? Let's see. Prajapati Prabhu, does it say that at the end of the book?
It may or may not.
It may or may not. Uh-oh. Prabhupada said Trinam. That convinces me more than what the other thing you said. It might be longer, but it still might be Trinavarta instead of Trinavarta. Okay, we're speculating again. But if Prabhupada said it like that, that's great. Okay, so I'll say it. One gopi took the role of... Oh, wait, we're still doing the word for word, right? Sorry.
It's like the many devotees going around saying Brahma instead of Lord Brahma.
I know.
They say that accent, they'd be best for the accent to be.
Yeah, I personally don't mind.
Brahma.
But, when you're up giving class and you're trying to pronounce the Sanskrit properly and it comes to mind what the correct way to do it is and what the correct way isn't. Oh, we say so many things. So many things we say. Okay. Jahara.
Jahara.
Carried away.
Carried away.
Anyam.
Anyam.
Another gopi.
Another gopi.
So according to this pronunciation, it's not gopi. It's gopi.
Gopi, yeah.
Eka, okay, let's continue. Eka, one gopi. Krishnarba, of the infant Krishna. Bhavanam, who was assuming the mood. Ringayam, asa, crawled about. Kapi, one of them. Angri, her two feet. Karshanti, dragging. Gosha, of tinkling bells. Nihishvanai, with the sounding. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. One gopi took the role of Trinavarta and carried away another, who was acting like infant Krishna, while yet another gopi crawled about, her ankle bells tinkling as she pulled her feet. Purport. The gopis started imitating all of Sri Krishna's pastimes, beginning from his earliest activities as a baby. I'll continue. Translation. The two gopis acted like Rama and Krishna. Two gopis acted like Rama and Krishna in the midst of several others who took the role of cowherd boys. One gopi enacted Krishna's killing of the demon Vatsasura, represented by another gopi. And a pair of gopis acted out the killing of Bakasura. When one gopi perfectly imitated how Krishna would call the cows who had wandered far away, how he would play his flute, and how he would engage in various sports, the others congratulated her with exclamations of, "Well done, well done." Another gopi, her mind fixed on Krishna, walked about with her arm resting on the shoulder of a friend and declared, "I am Krishna. Just see how gracefully I move." "Don't be afraid of the wind and rain," said one gopi. "I will save you." And with that, she lifted her shawl above her head. Purport. Here a gopi enacts Lord Krishna's pastime of, who can guess? Govardhan lifting Govardhan Hill, right? I'll read it again just so you can get it this time. "Don't be afraid of the wind and rain," said one gopi. "I will save you." And with that, she lifted her shawl above her head. Would you like to demonstrate, Manaji? No? Lift your shawl above your head. Like you're lifting Govardhan. No, come on, you can do better. Put your pinky under your shawl and lift it up. Pinky of your left hand. That's pretty good. It's a pretty steep, narrow hill, though. Oh, that's two hands. All right, that's good. Can we get a picture of that? Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "O king, one gopi climbed on another's shoulders and pulling her foot on the other's head." What? One gopi climbed on another's shoulders and putting her foot on the other's head. That's pretty acrobatic. Climb on someone's shoulders and put your foot on their head. Said, "Go away from here, O wicked snake. You should know that I have taken birth in this world just to punish the envious." Who can guess what pastime that is? Yes. Krishna chastising Kaliya. Then another gopi spoke up. "My dear coward boys, look at this raging forest fire. Quickly, close your eyes, and I will easily protect you." Who can think of that pastime? Okay. Krishna putting out the forest fire. In one instance, he swallowed it, right? In the other instance, what did he do? There were two forest fires. I'm forgetting. Did he swallow both of them? Okay. One gopi tied up her slender companion with a flower garland and said, "Now I will bind this boy who has broken the butter pots and stolen the butter." The second gopi then covered her face and beautiful eyes, pretending to be afraid. It's interesting, I was at Donat Kelly Prabhu's house in at Kishori's house, and Rasalila and Priyatama were playing in the other room. And I never had children, I never really listened closely to the way kids played. I was listening this time, and they were really creative. And, they weren't enacting Krishna's pastimes, but they were very creative the way they were playing. No, they were, in one sense. They were chanting. It's a long story how they were doing it. It was very, very interesting, creative. So this reminds me of how, we can see how the gopis are also very, very creative. When was the last time someone got tied up with a flower garland? But it's what they had. Just like they were having kirtan, they had these, I don't know what they were called, these little blocks of wood. So they had no cartels, so they were doing kirtan with the blocks of wood, playing them like cartels. So I'm reminded. Of course, later, as they become more and more Krishna conscious, they'll be imitating Krishna's pastimes, feeling great separation, using whatever is available as their props. The gopi said, the marks of a flag, lotus, thunderbolt, elephant, goad, barley corn, and so forth on these footprints clearly distinguish them as belonging to that great soul, the son of Nanda Maharaj. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on this verse, gives the following scriptural information about the symbolic markings on the lotus feet of Krishna. Quote, in the following verses, the Skanda Purana states the particular places on his feet where Krishna carries the mark of the flag and also other marks, and the reasons for these marks. Quote, at the base of the large toe on his right foot, the unborn Lord carries the mark of a disc which cuts down the six mental enemies of his devotees. So, I'll keep reading. At the bottom of the middle toe of that same foot, Lord Achyuta has a lotus flower, which increases the greed for him in the minds of the bee-like devotees who meditate on his feet. At the base of his small toe is a thunderbolt, which smashes the mountains of his devotees' reactions to past sins. And in the middle of his heel is the mark of an elephant goad, which brings the elephants of his devotees' minds under control. So this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur interpreting, giving us the meanings of all the signs, symbols on Krishna's lotus feet. The joint of his right large toe bears the mark of a barley corn, representing all kinds of enjoyable opulences. So that's what a barley corn can symbolize, well, does symbolize on the lotus feet of Krishna. The Skanda Purana also states, that's in the Skanda Purana, quoted by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, sorry. The Skanda Purana also states, a thunderbolt is found on the right side of his right foot and an elephant goad below that. The Acharyas of the Vaishnava Sampradaya explain that since the particular feet under discussion are Lord Krishna's, we should know that the thunderbolt is at the base of his small toe and the elephant goad below the thunderbolt. An elephant goad on the heel belongs rather to Lord Narayan and other Vishnu Tattva expansions. So if you happen to see footprints with various marks, this helps you distinguish whose footprints you're seeing. If you happen to go to the Vrindavan forest.
So they are indentions in this foot that make a mark.
Well, they're marks.
I know, but they're not flat to make a mark on the ground.
Oh, I see. Okay. That's right. Good point. So these are not just marks, bas reliefs? They're three dimensional, or they're impressions. So when they either poke out or they poke in, Bhakti Rav is saying.
In.
They're impressions on his depressions. Really? You sure? Where did you get that? Do they say impressions on Krishna's lotus feet? Does it say? Oh, so Prajapati Prabhu is saying in a very, to help us understand how it's practical that whenever anyone has marks on their feet, they always go in, right? So when they're in the soil, they come out. Right? Not in the soil, though.
Oh, right?
Right? We're getting so much realization today during this class.
Oh, by the way, I found that thing that the last line of the Sanskrit pronunciation.
Oh, Prajapati Prabhu has found. Where is that?
The second to last line of the pronunciation.
This is very interesting. Whoops. Second to last line of this pronunciation guide. Okay, all of you who are listening at home, this is very important for your Sanskrit pronunciation. Now I can't find the guide. I had it before. Here it is. Okay, now where is that, Prabhu?
The second to the last line of the pronunciation, at least my body.
Okay, here it is. A long syllable is one whose vowel is long. A, E, etc. Or whose short vowel is followed by more than one consonant. And that includes H with a dot under it and M with a dot over it. Aspirated consonant. So, a long syllable is one whose vowel is long or whose short vowel is followed by more than one consonant. Thank you, Prabhu. Very good. So, translating that into practical application, what was the...
Instead of
Brahma. Oh, because of the H. Right. And what was the other one? The one we had today? Narottam, listen to this. You probably already knew it. So it's Trinavarta. The A doesn't have a line over it, but because it's followed by an R and a T, which is two consonants, it's long. Very interesting. I know Banahari Prabhu is very good at Sanskrit pronunciation, and he always listens to these things, and he corrects the devotees when they're a little bit off. It's good. Because just like when you speak English, now that doesn't sound right, does it? We say, Prabhu, I know you're from South America, but it's English. It's not English, right? So we're concerned about these things, right? So I'm sure Krishna is as well. And this is his language, and we're worshiping him by chanting these slokas. Okay. Sorry for the interlude here, but these things are interesting and important. After 43 years, I'm learning a little bit how to pronounce. Okay, so... all right, so we also determined that the impressions on Krishna's feet go inward, not outward. Dr. Rob was questioning whether they do or not. But we figured out that they go inward. Also with Pujapati Prabhu's help. Thank you. So, okay, continuing on. Thus, the Skanda Purana describes six marks on Krishna's right foot: the disc, flag, lotus, thunderbolt, elephant goad, and barley corn. And the Vaishnav Toshan Ni mentions even more marks: a vertical line beginning at the middle of his foot and continuing as far as the juncture between his big toe and the second toe. Now, these marks aren't, their significance isn't being described, whereas the other marks, we read their significance, which is very interesting. An umbrella below the disc. It'd be nice if there were meanings indicated somewhere for these. It'd be interesting. Okay. Do you remember the meanings of some of those? Barley corn? What does it signify? All kinds of material opulence. Interesting, isn't it? So, in other words, a barley corn is a pretty opulent particle of grain. Or grains are opulences, so that could represent grains in general. At the base of the middle of his foot, a group of four svastikas in the four cardinal directions. Now, a svastika is auspicious because it's on Krishna's lotus foot, or is there another reason why the symbol of a svastika is auspicious?
Symbol of Ganesh. As well.
That's a symbol of Ganesh, svastika.
In the global ashram in Vrindavan, it was amazing that all around the altar were alternate svastikas and six-pointed stars, like the Star of David. That's very unusual.
Yeah. Pujapati Prabhu is pointing out in general that it's very unusual to see svastikas. What to speak of Star of David and Swastika, etc., on the ashram, one ashram in India, Fogal Ashram. Now, so we know that Swastika is auspicious. We understand that. At the same time, those devotees who are fond of getting tattoos shouldn't get Swastikas on their... And we should, in general, we shouldn't wear clothing with svastikas. Ajamil Prabhu has his shirt that he, kurta that he loves, that has svastikas all over it. And
here in the temple, they had made deity outfits with svastikas all over.
Yeah.
Everyone decided that was not very good.
Yes, when you tell a person you meet on the street that they go, well, this isn't a real thing. They go, they won't notice. That's the thing we know. That they go in the Hitler's swastika. I was told that before. Goes in the opposite direction. But for people, a swastika is a swastika because they're not so familiar with them because they don't draw them. So I told Adrian, please don't wear this kurta. He said, but it's auspicious. It's very inauspicious for most people. So we might, so many things we might know, but we have to be user friendly. We're not in India, and we have to understand what buttons not to push of people in general. It's very important. Okay. At the base of the middle of his foot, a group of four svastikas in the four cardinal directions. At the four points where each svastika meets the next, four rose apples. In the middle of the svastikas, an octagon. This makes 11 marks on Krishna's right foot. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti describes the marks on Krishna's left foot as follows. The base of the large toe is a conch shell with its mouth facing the toe. At the base of the middle toe are two concentric circles representing the inner and outer sky. So now that is being described a little further now. Below the mark is Cupid's unstrung bow. At the base of the bow is a triangle. And surrounding the triangle is a group of four water pots. At the base of the triangle is a half moon with two more triangles touching its points. And below the half moon is a fish. Altogether, then, there are 19 distinguishing marks on the soles of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. Translation. The gopis began following Krishna's path, is shown by his many footprints. But when they saw that these prints were thoroughly intermixed with those of his dearmost consort, they became perturbed and spoke as follows. Gopi said, here we see the footprints of some gopi who must have been walking along with the son of Nanda Maharaj. He must have put his arm on her shoulder. Just as an elephant rests his trunk on the shoulder of an accompanying she-elephant. Certainly this particular gopi has perfectly worshipped the all-powerful personality of Godhead, Govinda, since he was so pleased with her that he abandoned the rest of us and brought her to a secluded place. So there's a nice purport here. I'll read. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti explains that the word araditaha refers to Srimati Radharani. He comments, the sage Sukadeva Goswami has tried with all endeavor to keep her name hidden. But now it automatically shines forth from the moon of his mouth. That he has spoken her name is indeed her mercy. And thus the word aradita is like the rumbling of a kettle drum sounded to announce her great good fortune. Although the gopis spoke as if jealous of Srimati Radharani, they were actually ecstatic to see that she had captured Sri Krishna. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti quotes the following detailed description of Srimati Radharani's footprints as given by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Sri Ujjvala Nilamani. Nilamani. At the base of the large toe of her left foot is the mark of a barley corn. Below that mark is a disc. Below the disc is an umbrella, and below the umbrella is a bracelet. A vertical line extends from the middle of her foot to the juncture of her large and second toes. At the base of the middle toe is a lotus. Below that is a flag with a banner. And below the flag is a creeper, together with a flower. At the base of her small toe is an elephant goad. and upon her heel is a half moon. Thus there are 11 marks on her left foot. The base of her large toe, on the base of the large toe of her right foot is a conch shell, and below that a spear. And the base of the at the base of the small toe of her right foot is the sacrificial altar. Below that an earring, and below the earring a spear. Along the base of the second, third, fourth, and small toes is the mark of a mountain, below which is a chariot. And on the heel is a fish. Thus altogether there are 19 distinguishing marks on the soles of Srimati Radharani's lotus feet. I'll just read one more. O girls, the dust of Govinda's lotus feet is so sacred that even Brahma, Shiva, and the goddess Ram take that dust upon their heads to dispel sinful reactions. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, who quotes from Shastra, each day in the late afternoon, as Sri Krishna returned from the cow pastures with his coward boyfriends, great demigods like Brahma and Shiva would come down from heaven and take the dust of his feet. Great personalities like the goddess Ram, the wife of Vishnu, the goddess Rama, the wife of Vishnu, Shiva and Brahma are not at all sinful, but in the ecstasy of pure Krishna consciousness, they feel themselves fallen and impure. Thus, desiring to purify themselves, they blissfully take the dust of the Lord's lotus feet on their heads. So this is a very beautiful chapter. Especially, we have the chance to read so many commentaries of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, describing this beautiful pastime. So reading about Vrindavan is so nice. So nice. And reading about Krishna and the gopis is so nice. Of course, we should be careful that we don't concentrate too much on the portions of these descriptions that are very rasika in relationship to the conjugal ras. Because we're not really, I can speak for myself, it's up to everyone to decide. I'm not really qualified to enter into those very, very intimate pastimes. Prabhupada wrote the Krishna book in such a way that we could get a glimpse of these pastimes and so that we could understand the spiritual import of these pastimes without becoming confused and thinking of Krishna as an ordinary or as a great debauchee. Everybody in India knows that Krishna is great, but there many are thinking of him in the wrong way. So we certainly shouldn't fall in this category. So we understand who Krishna is. And we understand who Krishna is by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, and it's explained that once we have an understanding of the knowledge given in the nine cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we can begin reading the tenth canto with some understanding and not misconstrue at the same time, even though we do have an understanding. If there's even the slightest bit of lust that is generated by reading these rasika pastimes, we shouldn't read them. And for most of us, we're not on the platform being free from lust. So when these descriptions are there, it's not that our love increases. So we have to be very, very careful. They're just like the Govinda Lilamrita was written by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Perfect. But it's not that we can read any book. The Govinda Lilamrita is filled with rasika pastimes that normal devotees or devotees who are in a very, very high platform should not read. Otherwise, that would generate lusty desires, lusty thoughts, even though we understand who Radharani is, who Krishna is, intellectually. And the example that Prabhupada gave regarding that was that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to publish the Govinda Lilamrita. And his father, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, said, "Yes, you can. One copy for yourself." And we know here in this chapter also, there are some Rasika references, and in Chaitanya Charitamrita also, descriptions. So Prabhupada was very, very careful about warning us not to focus on these things. So much to focus on. It's one thing to read through it, but to focus on it and concentrate on it, which is what the devotees were doing in Los Angeles in the early 70s, 70, I forget. They had what they called the Gopi Bhava Club. And they were focusing because they wanted to feel, they wanted to enter into Radha and Krishna's pastimes. So they were focusing on those elevated, very elevated pastimes so they could increase their desire. And Prabhupada said, first deserve, then desire. But Prabhupada was angry. Were you there, Prajapati? Prajapati was...
Prabhupada was translating the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the members of the press were getting these intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and were getting together to read them together. Right. And when Prabhupada heard about it, he was not pleased.
No, he was angry. His lips were quivering. I remember that description. I was in San Diego. Filtered down. Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. We were in 73. We were neighbors. Right. That's when we ran for. We had that political campaign. Prajapati was going to be the mayor of, just about to run for the election and get elected as mayor of Los Angeles, but Prabhupada stopped the In God We Trust party at that time. So Prajapati went on to become prominent in other areas. At any rate, Prabhupada was very, very careful. Very, very careful to tell us not to focus. And he gave the... That's when he gave the analogy of a chemist has so many products. But the expert doctor can tell you which ones to take in what proportion. So that's what Prabhupada did for us. What to emphasize. And devotees were always wondering, what's the priority? Sankirtan or deity worship? And then, what's the priority in terms of Sankirtan? Harinam or book distribution? Or what's the priority? Should we stay out late going on Harinam every night? Because it's so crowded. I remember Prabhupada gave that instruction in LA also. It's ecstatic. Devotees were getting up at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning every morning. So what's the priority? Prabhupada was always showing us how to focus. What should we chant 64 rounds a day and not preach? What's the priority? So very often in our spiritual lives we have to try to understand, well, what's the priority between this spiritual activity and this other spiritual activity? So Prabhupada was always able to set us straight. And especially in this category, very, very important because there are so many sahajiyas, so many books. And even chanting the name of Radharani in Kirtan, I remember Harikesh Maharaj, he describes this very specifically, how Prabhupada... sometimes he would hear Mangalartik. This is an Indian Vrindavan. He would hear Mangalartik, or it was in Mayapur, I think, maybe Mayapur. And he would discuss with Harikesh, because he was his secretary, what he liked and what he didn't like. And then he said, for Mangal Arati, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Hare Krishna, and nothing else. He said that he was very, and he said morning melody, and he sang the morning melody. No other melody, this is the melody. And then they would have Mangal Arati in Prabhupada's room, and one morning Harikesh Prabhu, he sang Mangal Arati for Prabhupada, because he knew exactly, and Prabhupada wanted it, he knew exactly how Prabhupada wanted it, so he sang it. And at the end, after the final Hare Krishna mantra, he sang, Jaya Radhe, Jaya Radhe. And Prabhupada got really upset. He looked at him in a way that practically destroyed him. And Prabhupada had said that Sukadeva Goswami didn't even feel himself qualified to chant the name of Radharani. So, it's interesting. Prabhupada said, of course, there's nothing wrong with the name of Radharani. Prabhupada didn't chant it. And he didn't want us to chant it. So, it's interesting to think about these things when we're chanting. And especially the older devotees, they set the standard for the younger devotees. The younger devotees come, and they see what the older devotees are doing, and they think, well, this is the way you're supposed to chant kirtan. And the best thing, the safest thing, of course, just because Prabhupada liked to eat certain preparations, it's not that we just eat what Prabhupada ate, or Prabhupada chanted one melody, basically, sometimes other melodies. Not that we have to chant. Prabhupada said so many things about melodies that we can chant. There are traditional melodies. He said you can also sing your own melodies. So, but it's not that it's wrong to do it the way Prabhupada did it. So when Prabhupada ended kirtan, how did he end it? Hare Krishna. That's it. Sped it up. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's it. So, at least we should think, well, that's great, that's fine. Not that we look at the devotee and think, well, what happened to the Hari Bol? Where's the Jai Prabhupada? Where's the Jai Radha Kalachandri and Jai? It's not necessary to do that. And sometimes it's even a little bit, it takes away a little bit from the kirtan if you do it too much. So many deities, I've been at temples where so many deities, and they chant each deity's name twice, then Prabhupada's name twice, Nitya-Gaur Hari Bol twice, Jai Gurudev twice, and you have, after 10 minutes or so of doing that, literally, then the kirtan's over. Everything's included in the Hare Krishna mantra. Everything. And for that reason, there's no need to, and also it's prescribed. That's the Yuga Dharma. So to take away from the chanting, normally we have a limited amount of time for chanting. So to take away from that, we have to consider what's more important, what's more valuable, and how Prabhupada set the example. So these are all interesting points to make. But getting back to that theme of Radharani, it's so sweet. Now, in programs that we're giving during the weekend, we're often reading from the Venu Gita, which describes the pastimes and the emotions of all the residents of Vrindavan. The animate, non-animate, because they're all experiencing great ecstasy. So we all love these pastimes. We just have to take them in the right way. If we do, then we'll get maximum benefit from them, and we'll have the right understanding more and more, and we'll be able to enter in more and more into these pastimes. So does anyone have any questions or comments? There are more things I can talk about. Yes, Manji. Wait.
Hare Krishna. I had a question from verse number 25.
Verse 25.
When Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti is describing, is quoting about Krishna's lotus feet. And so it's describing the thunderbolt. And then he says, it's further down in the paragraph, at the base of his small toe is a thunderbolt, which smashes the mountains of his devotees' reactions to past sins. And in the middle of his heel is the mark of an elephant goad, which brings the elephant of his devotees' minds under control. So when a devotee comes to Krishna, we hear that the Hare Krishna mantra can destroy all the sins, even past sins, future sins. So why is there a mountain of sinful reactions?
Well, in other words, Krishna, in so many ways, through the chanting of Hare Krishna, accepting the spiritual mass, you're becoming free from sinful reactions. My understanding is that you don't become free from all of them completely all at once. And also, in other words, if we take shelter of Krishna, of Krishna's lotus feet, then we can see, when I was reading these descriptions of the marks on Krishna's lotus feet, I was relishing them a lot, especially the ones that where it describes the significance of each mark. So I was understanding that by taking Krishna shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, not that we're getting under Krishna's feet and he's putting his feet on our head, but this is what would you call it? A metaphor that's being presented. So that's the point that's being made. If we take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet in all the various ways that we have, through the service, through the chanting of the holy name, accepting the spiritual master, etc., then we become free from all of these things. That's the potency of Krishna's lotus feet. At the base of the large toe, on his right foot, the unborn Lord carries the mark of a disc. So what does the disc do? Cuts down the six mental enemies of his devotees. What is that? Lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, illusion. Are those the six mental enemies? Anyway, it's a beautiful description. Lotus flower, what does that do? On Krishna's foot, it increases the greed for him in the minds of the bee-like devotees who meditate on his feet. The thunderbolt, you read. The elephant goad, beautiful. And already we know what the barley corn signifies. All kinds of material opulences. So, what does that mean? Oh no, all kinds of enjoyable opulences. That's good. Because enjoyable opulences for a devotee is what? Well, the opulences of Krishna and Krishna consciousness, right? That's what Krishna gives his devotees. Sometimes he gives us material opulences also, which can be enjoyed if they're used in relationship to Krishna. Just like we have such a nice temple. We enjoy it, right? Because it's a means of glorifying Krishna, and so many people come because it's so beautiful. So it's a material opulence used in Krishna's service. So we can enjoy that. We got a lot of money donated. I remember in San Diego, we moved in. It was basically a box, just a building. We got a lot of money donated to fix it up. So we made the temple room, the deity kitchen, the altar, Shingasans, the ashram. We built the whole temple in there. And it was ecstatic going out every day and buying walls, floors, ceilings, everything. Everything in there we bought. We were dealing with all these material opulences day after day after day and choosing whichever ones we wanted. It was ecstatic going shopping every day, all day, because we think of the deities and the devotees. So all kinds of opulences, spiritual and material, to use in Krishna service, then it's a source of great happiness, great ecstasy. Thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
First red day, it seems, I may be confused, but I thought that the...
Speak.
I'm confused possibly, but I thought that the gopis weren't aware of the fact that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but from the verse we read today, it seems that they're very aware of that fact.
I'm not sure which verse you're referring to, but they become aware and then they...
Bhagavan,
they call it Bhagavan. Just like Mother Yasoda or Nanda Maharaj, they're told, and they say, yeah, he might be God, but he's my son. And Dhanada Swami always gives the example of his mother bragging about him. You know, he's a guru, but he's my son more than anything else. He's my son. It's like that. Hearing Krishna being glorified, that's great. What's prominent in their consciousness, in their minds, is that Krishna is their lover. And him being God doesn't mean anything. It has no significance to them at all. To the point where they don't, most of the time, it doesn't even enter into their consciousness. And if it does, it doesn't register. Anybody else?
But just those enemies, those mental enemies.
Yeah.
In Girish Chandra Ghosh's play of Kali and Lord Chaitanya, the six enemies, lust, anger, greed, envy, madness
and illusion.
And
illusion. Yeah.
Like that.
And laziness. Well, what is it? Kama, Loba, Matsarya. What else, Naranta? Kama, Loba, Matsarya.
Krodha.
Krodha, anger.
Kama, Krodha, Loba.
Yeah, Kama, Krodha, Loba, Moha.
Matsarya.
Mada and Matsarya. Okay. Here you go. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.